BBC Radio 1. BBC Radio 1 free downloads. Download them all for free at the Radio 1 website.
It's 4 o'clock. I'm Alice. I'm 14 and I'm from Barnstable. You might not know this, but I'm the third best baton twirler in Europe. Anyway, now it's time for my favourite show on the radio, Scott Mills.
Scott Mills, BBC Radio
1. Hello, would you like a weekend? Alice introduced the show today. Alice, you're off school today?
Yeah.
What's up?
I'm all dizzy and shaky and...
Boo.
Not very well.
Oh, it's good you mustered up the energy to introduce the show today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Are you on half term now?
Yeah, today.
Yes. What are your plans for next week?
Training for the World Championships in Easter.
So you are the third best twirler of batons in the whole of Europe?
Yeah.
In your age group?
Yeah.
And you're going to be competing in the World Championships?
Yeah, in Switzerland.
That's so good.
I'm so excited.
When did you first realise that you were an expert baton twirler?
I started when I was 5, but I got a really great trainer when I was 10, so since then I've been in the England team and competing.
Do you spin it around so fast that you can't really tell what it is anymore?
Yeah, sometimes.
It's just a blur in your fingers.
Yeah.
Can we see you anywhere? I mean, do they put it on Sky Sports or anything, these championships?
No.
We want to see you do it.
There might be some videos on YouTube, I don't know. But if they're campaigning to get it into the Olympics, I think.
Yeah.
But obviously not this year.
That would be good in the Olympics, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be amazing.
I know people that various sports channels do listen to this show, so, you know, maybe we can get baton twirling on there.
Yeah, it'd be amazing.
How long have we got to try and get it on TV? When are the World Championships of baton twirling?
April, the very beginning of April.
Right, not that long.
I think in America they record and show on TV.
We should do it here. If the head of BBC Sport is listening, put the World Championship baton twirling on and all of our listeners will watch it. Is that right, Alice?
Actually, this is really, I don't know whether it's rude for asking, but... I really need sponsorship for the World Championship.
Okay.
So maybe you could ask or something.
How much do you need? I mean, I could sponsor the whole team, maybe.
Oh, well, it's £800 individually, so I don't think...
Okay, I might pass on that. What do I get for that? Do I get my name anywhere, like on anyone's top or something?
I'd put you on my top, and my team, maybe.
All right, OK. Well, it's something I definitely could discuss further. But if anyone does have loads of money that they want to give to Alice as sponsorship, then do get in touch.
Thank you.
And by that time, there might even be, like, match of the day of baton twirling on the TV, and then, like, publicity ahoy. All right, Alice, well, listen, good luck with the championships in Switzerland.
Thank you so much.
Love you, bye.
Bye.
The Scott Mills Daily. BBC Radio 1.
Okay, I have somebody here on the phone that might be able to help Alice. Tom Daly, hi.
Hello.
Hello there. Now, you're at the Olympics and all that, aren't you?
Yeah, that's kind of the plan.
Yeah, yeah. Our friend Alice, who introduced the show today, is 14 and she is third best in Europe at twirling a baton. Now, wow. you're big in the Olympic game. Can you have a word and try and get the baton twirling recognised in the Olympics, please?
Yeah, well, it is artistic. It's the rhythmic gymnastics, isn't it? It's actually quite a cool event to go and watch, actually, yeah. To be honest.
We need it on TV more, because Alice, like, you know, we need to see what she's doing.
Yeah, I know. They need to show it a little bit more. But I think they do show it in the Olympics, because I'm pretty sure I've seen it in the Olympics before.
Really?
Yeah. But it's like diving. They only show it when it's at the Olympics.
Right, but yeah, no other time.
Yeah, bit of an issue.
Right, I know you were on with Moyles earlier, but Tom, OMG to this video.
Yeah, it was definitely real good fun to make. But the reaction on Facebook and Twitter has been awesome.
Well, why I wanted to speak to you, because obviously since Chris spoke to you earlier, the word is out there. Everyone's been watching this LMFAO video. It's all over Twitter and Facebook, as you rightly said. I know Chris kind of touched on this, but, like, what made you think, I know, I'm in Australia, I'll get on my Speedos and make a video? It is very funny. Is this how you prepare for the Olympics?
Happened. Well, to be honest, we were at a training camp and it was kind of out there and we needed something to do in between the training sessions and we thought, why not make a music video? And we thought, the Sexy and I Know It was the song that was out at the time and we thought it would be really funny to do it because most of the time in the video anyway, they're in Speedos. So we thought we'd just actually try and take the mick out of ourselves and kind of make a funny video.
Should you not be maybe diving into some pools?
Yeah, but we were training in between that. It was just, we did most of that filming actually on our day off, but everyone got behind it and everyone loved it.
If you've not seen it yet, do get it on YouTube. It's just put Tom Daly, LMFAO. It's him and the Team GB diving squad. And Tom, I've got to congratulate you because today, and for some time I would say, this is the campest video ever on YouTube.
Nice.
It really is.
Yeah, it's basically four boys, two girls, all prancing around in minimal clothing. Basically, all the boys are in Speedos and all the girls are in bikinis. So if you like a bit of flesh on show in your videos, go and have a look at it.
Are you rich? Because you could sponsor the baton twirlers. They've been back onto me. you must have a few bobs.
Diving, I promise you, diving is not one of those sports that you do it for that. You have to do diving or any Olympic sport, actually, because you love it. And not like a footballer. Unfortunately.
Okay, well, I thought I'd just ask, Tom. But if you could have a word with the Olympic people and get baton twirling on the TV, that would really help out Alice a lot.
I will do.
And everyone else that hasn't seen the video, go enjoy it. Like I say, the campest thing you've seen in a while. Love you, Tom!
Love you!
The Scott Mills Daily. BBC Radio 1.
If you want to see Daniel Radcliffe on your computer, go to the Radio 1 website now. bbc.co.uk/Radio 1. Be able to see him in 10 seconds. Hi, Daniel.
Hello, Scott. How
are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for coming in.
No, thank you for having me.
I just had a little Google of you earlier.
All right.
Because I like to Google the guests.
Okay.
Does it excite you that when you Google Daniel, you are the first one that comes up?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Not Daniel Craig?
You beat Daniel Craig.
That does excite me. Am I still above Danielle Lloyd?
That doesn't count because it's an E on the end.
Yeah, I know, but if you type in Daniel, she'll still come up.
Will she?
Yeah.
You've done it before.
No, I have, because I love to see what comes up with my name.
Mm.
And it's always quite amusing.
Yeah.
So, you know, what Google thinks. What have we got at the moment? Right. Daniel, okay. Okay, so I'm
Is this a thing you do every day?
No. All right, Daniel Radcliffe girlfriend, Daniel Radcliffe gay, Daniel Radcliffe Twitter, Daniel Radcliffe height. Daniel Radcliffe height comes up a lot.
I don't
have a lot of it.
You're also above Daniel Day-Lewis and Daniel Bedingfield.
That is, I can't believe.
I know.
That is ridiculous that I'm above Daniel Craig and Daniel Day-Lewis.
I think it makes you the most famous Daniel in the world.
Well, that may be true for a fleeting moment, but I'll enjoy it while it lasts.
Now, I was in the news agents earlier buying a toffee crisp, if you must know.
I did want to know.
And you are on the front of a lot of magazines at the moment.
I know. I know. I'm sorry, everybody. When you go into the news agents in the morning and you just all you see is me, I'll finish this press tour in about a week and a half, and then I can stop invading all of your lives. it's quite nice. And actually, it's nice to be. It's nice to have something when I emerge in the morning It's I do come out of bed as some sort of primordial hobbit.
Right.
So it's quite nice to have like pictures of me looking good to point at to my girlfriend.
Look,
so
that is me.
Members, I can be attractive sometimes.
Yeah. When you read those magazine articles, they're normally quite long, aren't they? They're like 3, 4, 5 pages.
Yeah, I don't read them.
You don't?
No, no. Oh, right. I mean, I read some of them. But,
I was going to ask if they ever bear any resemblance to what you actually said.
Sometimes they do. It depends who wrote it. I mean, sometimes they're very. Sometimes people come with an agenda, or they come wanting to make you sound a certain way. Mm. You know, and that's the main reason. Like, I'm this press tour is kind of mad. Is that I'm now at the point where like I'm having stuff quoted back to me that I said 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
That I'm like, oh. And you know, and it was, and clearly the stuff that gets quoted back to me, I'm like, okay, that was obviously on my 100th interview of the day, and I was just running my mouth.
favourite one is the "I've got a crush on Ryan Gosling" thing. That's the latest one.
Because in that interview, the guy asked me if I asked me like 3 times if there was a guy I had a crush on, and I said no, and then no again, and I said no, and then I was like, okay, well, fine, if we've got to say something, I'll go Ryan Gosling, you know.
But that's the bit they blow up.
Yeah, of course. It's like, you know, I you know, any comment that I make at the moment gets blown vastly out of proportion and distorted in meaning, but yeah. I'm kind of used to that. I'm kind of trying to let it wash over me.
I made a terrible comment about Will Young once, and they blew that up, and it all went off.
Which I regret now. And as everyone knows, Will Young is a violent man who will come for you.
That's right.
He will hunt you
he
down.
He will hunt you down, and when he finds you, he will kill you. So I saw the new film Woman in Black yesterday. Great film.
Thank you, sir.
Have you always wanted to do this kind of film? Because it's not like a horror movie. It's not gory. It's kind of spooky.
Well, it's interesting because it's the definition of horror has kind of changed over the last 20 or so years quite a lot. And as James Watkins, our director, pointed out, there is a difference between a nasty film and a scary film.
Yeah.
You know, nasty Hostel and Saw and all those movies. Of course, if you show people graphic, upsetting imagery, they're going to be upset and be scared. But this is a film about what you don't see and about what it taps into. Things we have evolved for thousands of years to fear. Darkness, the unknown, noises that we can't figure the origin of. You know, it's about suspense and tension, much more in the vein of something like The Others or The Orphanage than any of those other slasher films.
Without ruining the film, all the stuff that happens is what Yvette Fielding would love to happen on Most Haunted. It's like Yvette Fielding's fabulous dream. There's a lot of moments that make you jump.
Yeah. Is that we don't use night vision, but yes.
There's no night vision. There's no Derek Acora, as far as I can remember.
Which is a shame.
I know.
Which is a real shame. You know, I'd have liked to talk to him.
Mm. But maybe you should have done that for the research.
He may be talking to me now. I might just not know about it.
There is a lot of fog in it, Daniel.
There is a lot of fog in the film. You know, James Watkins, I keep saying James Watkins, our director, one of the things he's very keen on is that, you know, in America, they're very good at mythologizing their landscape. So New York, you see a New York skyline, you know it's New York.
Yeah.
You see LA, that city looks amazing, it's spread out and flat. Yeah. And, you know, James really wants to create a really cinematic version of England. We have these beautiful rolling landscapes and these towns which are kind of beautiful in their bleakness and in their isolation. And, you know, he just really has used all that. And James is somebody who, if you look at his previous film, Eden Lake, he uses setting. His setting and location is very important to the whole overall tone of the film with James.
Hmm. Well, the place you go to, let me just explain. You play a single father called Arthur Kipps. You go to a place called Eel Marsh. And where is that? Are you allowed to say?
The real house that we filmed in was in Peterborough.
Right. It's not a hotel, is it? Because I don't fancy staying there.
No, it is not a hotel, no. We did take some of our cues from The Shining, though, in terms of the design of it. I said that like I was somehow involved in the design of it. I was not involved in the slightest. It was all Cave Quinn. It is a very, very spooky house. And, you know, there's lots of, you know, very creepy Victorian children's toys and things. And yeah. It is a wonder that any Victorian children grew up well-adjusted.
Do people still live in that house?
The inside of it is a set.
Right.
The inside of the house is actually a very homely, warm kind of place. But
Even so.
Now
you say,
now
you say Peterborough,
film,
doesn't sound that spooky. Put some fog on it. Oh, God.
Yeah, exactly. It does. Fog makes anything much more spooky.
Yeah. And also you get to wear some clothes off the olden days.
I do, which is lovely. I was thinking for a long time that I really would have been quite suited to living in that period and just dressing like that all the time. But then I remembered they had things like typhoid.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have. I'm not so into that.
No, not as much
as
fun
as
you
a fashion would accessory.
Yeah, not as much fun as you would initially think.
No, think. Everyone says that about typhoid.
Yeah, they do. Also, quite early on in the film, you get to sit in what I imagine was a set, but like a really old train carriage.
I've done a bit of that. In my life.
We need to get onto that in a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. But yes, no, I did. I mean, I love it. I do like, you know, I like good engineering and things that are well built. So we were down
just
by the
looks
Blue Bell
really
Railway
cool.
And it was, and with these old trains, it was fantastic. I mean, in fact, you know what else is good is the old lift that you have here, which is excellent.
Ooh. Yeah, we do have that still here. Yeah. No, we've got a lift rather like the one in The Woman in Black still here at Radio 1.
Well, no. Anyway, I've confused two issues. I've been travelling around a lot this morning and I think I maybe have confused you with another building. But never mind, but I'm sure...
Oh, God!
I'm sure your lifts are wonderful too.
I know exactly the one you mean, and we have got one up there.
Thank you.
Now, you know, obviously you know the script and you know what bits are going to make you jump. Did you ever forget and go, ah!
There were a few moments when you let the atmosphere build and it's really quiet on set, and particularly if the camera crew's behind you and they're not in your eye line and you kind of forget about them for a second, and then James Watkins would come in and just give him like one of those suddenly or just try and freak me out. And that did work. But generally in the film, and actually funnily enough, there were a few moments in the film that I didn't know were going to be there, that James had planned at the time, but that he knew he was going to be putting effects and scary stuff in afterwards. The moment at the window from the trailer, that's one of the ones I didn't know, which made me shed my skin.
Yes.
Generally speaking, half the battle is about making sure that you're not anticipating what's about to happen, because you know where the jump's going to come, so it's about not telegraphing that to the audience too
right.
much.
Right. Now, I saw you were in Paris a couple of days ago for the French premiere.
Yes.
In a snazzy yellow tie.
Thank you.
Do cinemas vary from country to country? I mean, are there people eating baguettes instead of popcorn in the French one? Don't mean to stereotype.
But we will anyway. There is a difference, I have to say. New York, generally, you will get the loudest response to any film.
Really?
Yeah.
They clap.
New York, they clap, they cheer, they shout stuff. It's kind of awesome.
It's like they're at a theatre show. It's like, they can't hear you.
That's the thing as well, is that sometimes when people go to the theatre, they shout out as well, which is even more mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, you do get a difference. It's actually, what's interesting is the difference in... the questions I get asked from country to country.
Yeah, I was going to ask that as well.
It is very interesting, and it's because in some countries they all they want to talk about is the film.
Yeah.
And in some countries, all they want to talk about is my personal life.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's, you know, and Canada was just all about the film, barely asked a question about my own life. It was ideal. It was all I would much prefer it to be like that.
So in the foreign countries, do you go to a lot of the foreign premieres?
I have been on this tour. Generally speaking, I mean, on Potter, we generally did New York and London, and that was it. I went to Japan twice and France once with Potter, but never anywhere else, which is kind of amazing.
Do they show you in English, or are you dubbed into their language?
Generally speaking, I think on Potter we were dubbed. No, on Potter we were dubbed because I at one point met a lineup of myself in various different countries, of varying different languages.
Awesome.
Of Japanese me and Arabic me and Israeli me and it was kind of great. A surreal moment, but
that's
rather
brilliant.
Enjoyable.
Do any of them ever sound like you?
I actually haven't listened to
right.
them, so I don't know.
I was going to ask you, who has the best dubbed Daniel Radcliffe?
I'm not sure who that would be.
Yeah.
I'm going to
say... The whole lineup seemed nice.
They all seemed lovely. They seemed perfectly fitting.
That's so weird that you meet a lineup of people that are you.
Yeah, I know. It is, you know, life in my job, it affords you some really wonderful, surreal moments like that.
BBC Radio 1. The Scott Mills Daily.
Daniel Radcliffe is on Radio 1 right now. People are loving you.
Oh, yeah, good.
For a lot of people, you are now their favourite Daniel.
Oh, really? Well, thank you very much.
Which is really good.
That is good. I'm being a lot.
Now, there's a point where I have to say something to you, okay?
All right.
I'm embarrassed because I have never seen Harry Potter.
Oh, please don't be embarrassed. That delights me.
I feel bad. I'm so sorry.
No. It's refreshing to find
something
that
hasn't. I thought I'd be honest with you, Daniel, rather than try and blag it.
Well, yeah, because I would be able to tell if you were blagging it.
Because we would get into a whole conversation about stuff.
That's great. You don't even know enough to make a joke about it. That's
about
fantastic.
Hogwarts?
Hogwarts, that's great.
That's it.
Well done.
I mean, 7 billion people now on planet Earth. All of them have seen Harry Potter apart from one. What are the chances of you being interviewed by that person today?
About 7 billion to one, I guess. I'm not
amazing.
Sure.
And I keep getting questions from listeners like, and these could be a complete Mickey take on me, because I don't know. If why doesn't Lord Voldemort make his own nostrils bigger? What does that even mean?
I'm going to actually let you answer that. What do you think? Why would he not do that?
Because they're big enough.
Oh, well, you see, the fact is, he doesn't have it. He's, the bed doesn't have a nose. He just got sort of snake-like slits.
Okay, here's another one. Are you pleased you ended up with Ron? Did you end up with Ron?
No.
Who's Ron?
Ron is the other... I know.
Rupert Grint.
Oh, you do know...
So, I know that.
Okay. Well, you know, I didn't end up with him, though, so I didn't...
Okay.
I did, though, the other night. Maybe they're referring to something that I had to read on TV recently, which was some Harry and Ron...
Oh, sure.
Fan fiction.
Right, okay. Was, yes. Can I do one more that I don't really know?
Yeah.
If you could be in a house apart from Gryffindor, what would it be?
I guess Ravenclaw.
Cool.
You know, right. Scott's got you just look completely nonplussed. No, it's wonderful.
No, it's not that I'm nonplussed. It's just that I haven't seen it and I feel bad.
Please don't feel bad.
Is it weird not being Harry Potter anymore?
No, not at all. I had a life outside that the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, I was going home at night and being me.
Yeah.
And it's actually, you know, we had a fantastic 10 years and there is not one moment of it that I, you know, didn't love in terms of my time on set. And now, you know, we're moving on. 10 years is a long time to play one character, and we've had a great run and made some really good films, and now we're all going on to Past Is New.
Yeah. The last day of filming must have been a very strange day, right?
Yeah, it was. It was, I was very, you know, I was very emotional, and as we all were, you know, there was a lot of tears shed, but you know, it's 4 hours later, I was reading the Woman in Black script for the first time. So it's just
soon afterwards.
Yeah, it was. I was on a plane, and I read it immediately and just loved it, and knew that I wanted to be a part of it.
I'm hearing that you don't really talk to the other cast members, but then why would you? I suppose because everyone kind of moves on, don't they?
No, but this is the thing. This is what I'm talking about this press tour. And like I say, I did an interview 4 weeks ago, probably, or a month, as some people know it, in which I said. I just kind of went, you know, they said to me, do you talk to Rupert and Emma much? And I said, Emma and I have been texting the other day. And you know, Rupert and I don't really text. Rupert and I haven't texted each other. I think we might have sent each other one text each in 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, we're lazy, bad texters.
Yeah.
And that doesn't change just because you stop working together.
But why does that matter?
But that's the thing. It's like, really, the world now judges friendship by how frequently you text.
Yeah.
Not by the quality of conversation or relationship. I mean, you know, the people... I think I'm not very interesting, probably. So anytime I say something that can be spun into something interesting, it's, you know, because I don't give the, you know, the press a huge amount to get excited about. So I suppose when I say something like that can be made to sound controversial, they'll take their chance.
You know, on the last day, did you, or at any time during the Harry Potter series, did you nick anything from the set? Because I would have.
I did.
What did you take?
You wouldn't have known what you were nicking, though.
No, that's true. Oh, I've got a Hogwarts. No. good. Is that good?
Yeah. Yeah, near enough. I'm going to get a lot of texts and emails about this.
I know. I'm prepared. I just wanted to be honest because I talked about this yesterday on air and we're like, well, you've got to come clean. You can't just try and blag it. And you're like, no, absolutely not. I could not blag it.
Oh, well.
What did you nick, please?
Well, I stole two pairs of the glasses. I got a pair from the first film, and my character wears glasses. And I paired
from
the first film and a pair from the last one.
I know that, Daniel.
So the first ones are very sweet and just tiny and, like, you know, a child's glasses. They're quite sweet. I didn't want anything else because everyone sort of says, do you want the wand? And I didn't really because they had changed halfway through. The glasses had been, you know, the same style throughout. And it's
nice. You must have got through quite a few pairs of glasses.
Yeah, I mean, probably five or six. Mm. That's just aside from the ones that broke and, you know, that I smashed up doing stuff. Not just in a fit of rage. Yeah, wow.
Cool, okay. So, now listen, Woman in Black.
Yes.
It's out today.
Today. Yeah, right.
Why should people go and see your film?
Because it is very scary, and it's a horror film. It's a type of horror film that's not really around much at the moment.
Yes.
It is gothic and suspenseful, and really, really scary. And it's certainly a film that, you know, it's a good date movie as well, because, you know, it's a type of film to get a girl jumping into your arms, or vice versa. You know,
I mean, you could really hold onto someone tight during this film,
and legitimately not be like creepy,
absolutely,
and just be, you know, necessary.
Yeah.
So it is, you know,
that's a great idea.
It's a scary film. It's a really good movie, I think. Anyway, I was in it, so I'm bound to say that. But I do. I love it, and I think people will really like it.
I am not keen on those dolls.
The dolls all come from one woman's house in America. She collects them.
Really?
Yeah. She collects Victorian automata.
Scary as. Daniel, thank you so much for coming in to see us
today. Thank you very much for having me.
Daniel Radcliffe, thank you very much. Thank you.
BBC Radio 1. BBC Radio 1 free downloads.